Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are, and they've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Now head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code 3blokes, that's the number 3 followed by blokes, for 10% off all their natural products, and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning and good evening from wherever you are listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson and welcome to episode 111 of 3blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Approaching squeaky bum time at the end of the season for the Northern and Southern Hemispheres. And it is my pleasure to be joined by a pair of squeaky bums themselves, Jed Amos-Goddard and Callum Wood. Welcome to the podcast. Jed, I've just got to ask you, mate, fully recovered from COVID, out of isolation as of tomorrow. How are you feeling, mate?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I've got my taste back, which was a big blow. Couldn't enjoy any food. My smell is nearly there, but yeah, I'm just happy to be allowed to have some fresh air and not be confined to a room as I have been for the last 10 days. So yeah, it's good to be out.
Good stuff, mate. And Woody, Manchester half marathon yesterday, mate. How are them legs feeling after that?
I'm not in great nick, I'll be honest. That's no secret. Played first game of rugby in a while on Saturday as well. So neck, shoulders and back are hanging from that. And legs are a bit like concrete from the run. So I'll probably struggle to get out of this chair at the end of the pod.
You were telling everyone that you won it, actually. So I'm not sure how well you went with that one, mate. But we'll investigate that one.
I got the medal for it, didn't I? So
if you got the medal, mate, you've won it, in my opinion. But looking at two sides who have won this past weekend in a pair of cracking NRL preliminary finals, we are down to the nitty-gritty. It's the South Sydney Bunnies 36, the Manly Warringah Seagulls 16. Woody, I know we actually made a bet on this last week and I can't remember who said who, so I'll assume, because it's my game, I said the Bunnies, so we'll decide what you owe me at that point. But
shaving our heads, isn't it?
What? But I mean, the Bunnies not only pulled a rabbit out of the hat, but they beat Manly at their very own game, in my opinion. Wayne Bennett is the absolute master at this stage of the season. Everybody, including us, in a sense, were putting them down kind of mid-season, back end of the season, for not playing the right players, for playing the different tactics, but he's pulled it out of the hat absolutely out of nowhere. Des will be disappointed with their overall performance, but I think the Bunnies won with a resolute game plan and executed perfectly with some of the best clutch players in the game. There are a lot of blokes in this Bunnies side who really deserve a grand final appearance, in my opinion, or even another appearance, much like Adam Reynolds, Alex Johnson and Tom Burgess, who appeared in the 2014 grand final. So if they get another lick, they'll be getting their second grand final appearance, so fair play to them. But maybe none more than someone like Cody Walker. It's someone who debuted in the NRL at the ripe old age of 26, and he just hasn't looked back since. He's now in his fifth or sixth season in the NRL. I don't think I've seen a halfback partnership link so perfectly like him and Reynolds in a long time, apart from maybe their opposition next week of Jerome Luai and Nathan Cleary. He thoroughly deserves it. Cody Walker is a spot-on player. He's superb. He plays how he needs to play, and he plays it exactly perfectly to a T. In this game especially, he got two tries, 100 run metres, one tackle break, 52 times he touched the ball, which is superb for a player of his position, really wanting the ball in hand, attacking the line whenever he can. He made 20 tackles as well. You can see he's been pinpointed in defence. And 277 kick metres, more than Adam Reynolds in general. I don't usually like picking out the kick metres stats because obviously it's kind of the quality of the kicks and not necessarily the distance of the kicks. But I think that speaks volumes to say that Cody Walker's not usually a kicker. In play, and Adam Reynolds wanted to either share it a bit more, or he was doing a bit more diverse kicking. Manly really struggled defensively against the bigger, quicker, more athletic sides, and they have done all season long. They're very good when they're actually working in structure, in my opinion, but when a team starts throwing it about a bit more and playing with a bit of width, a bit of pace, their cover defence can't keep up, and especially their width defence. We know the likes of Morgan Harper, Moses Sule, their outside backs have had quite a solid season and made big improvements, especially with the likes of Morgan Harper. But their edge defence just isn't massively up to scratch when you're playing the bigger sides, in my opinion. The teams that get success need to rely heavily on their defence and not just in their attack. We know how unbelievable Manly are in attack, but they come unstuck in these games, and it's shown time and time again, and it's something to improve on coming into next season. The game was over by half-time, in my opinion. Manly were totally beaten by the Souths, constantly spreading wide. Like I said, precision passing, superb decoy running, a and try scoring ability on the edges. It's just the Bunnies in the past probably 5 years under Bennett especially. Manly seem to fatigue very, very quickly, and quick plays by the Bunnies are absolutely killing them. It's something Jed and I pointed out at the start of this season. It's absolutely no secret whatsoever that the Bunnies work off a quick play of the ball, whether it's Tom Burgess, whether it's Totola, whether it's Koloatangi, whether it's Cameron Murray. It's the reason why Damien Cook's the most explosive hooker in the league. It's why they have Cody Walker running rings around everyone. And it's why Adam Reynolds can pivot in the middle to give it out to the likes of Dane Gagai, Jackson Paulo, Latrell Mitchell and Alex Johnson. It's the perfect attacking game plan, and it seems to work the majority of the time. Superb stuff. And when it defends fatigues very quickly, they just get picked apart. Classic tip on players once again by the Bunnies, and especially when Benji came on, he took advantage of that constantly, along with the likes of Blake Taff and Campbell Graham, who all got a line break assist each. Blake Taff is what a player. As soon as he's come into this side, he's not even a fullback, which surprises me a lot more. There is tips that he's going to replace Adam Reynolds in the halves coming into next season, with Jason Dimitriou becoming head coach. And he's a halfback by trade as well. So it's big boots to fill, but he's certainly getting the experience. And if he's lucky enough, and I'm pretty sure he will be lucky enough to get a grand final spot next week, he will become the least experienced player in the NRL era to line up in an NRL grand final with only 8 first grade games. And obviously that's from 1998 onwards. I think Moses and Bai made a similar amount of appearances in the 2014 grand final. And interestingly enough, we'll come on to it in a second, but the bloke who they will be lining up against, touch wood, he remains injury-free, in Api Korisau, played for them at hooker in the 2014 grand final for the South Sydney Bunnies. It was his first or second season, I believe, and he only played because Isaac Luke got suspended the week before, so the Bunnies will be knowing how to suss him out. We'll mention it this Thursday, lads, coming on to our NRL Interesting Facts podcast, but I'll bring it up anyway. And I was doing a bit of research, and 5 players in the history of Australian Rugby League entered the grand final fray with just one game under their belt, which is absolutely incredible. Harold Rankin in 1932 for the Western Suburb Magpies, Ernie Hamilton for the South Sydney Bunnies in 1949, Peter Bolton for Balmain in 1969, Russell Cox for St George in 1971, and John Rheinberger for the Eastern Suburb Roosters. All 5 names, superbly Australian and superbly old-fashioned as well. I love Ernie Hamilton. I feel as though he could definitely be a character on kind of Peaky Blinders or something like that. But yeah, especially John Rheinberger in 1975, he famously only played as a replacement in the prelim final the week before taking part in a 38-0 loss in the grand final, and it was he never played first grade again. So if you only ever played 2 first grade games and it's a prelim and a grand final, I guess it's the only thing better would be to actually win it. And I can't mention all of this without bringing up Benji once again, one of my personal favourite players of all time. He is probably the primary reason why I ended up supporting the West Tigers, and have had 16 years worth of misery, to be fair. But he is having 16 years between drinks of NRL grand final appearances, obviously for the West Tigers in 2005. And for the Bunnies, touch wood, this coming week as well. Fair play to him, Benji. He's a modern-day legend, and hopefully he can get another win under his belt as well. Jed, I'll come to you first, mate. I feel as though you've watched Manly quite consistently this year, whether it's just the way that it's fallen for us in terms of picking fixtures. Season in review, mate. You tell any Manly fan after 4 or 5 rounds that they're losing in a prelim final, they're going to eat you all up out of the bait. Should Manly fans be disappointed with how the season's gone?
No, I don't think. I think this could be disappointed with how it ended, but not as an overall. I'd just like to point out that in my pre-season previews, I predicted the wooden spoon for Manly, so I did well there. Although one thing that I did say is that they need a plan B for when Tom Trbojevic is injured, and that's still the case in my opinion. I know they have won a few games when Tom's not been playing after that first 4 games, but I still think they're very much a lot weaker and a different side without him. And even in the games that he does play, obviously it was cancelled out in this game, it was cancelled out in the previous games. When teams know how to stop Tom Trbojevic, such as your Melbournes, Manly don't have a second plan, and they can't seem to get past the line. So I feel like that's something they really, really need to work on going into next season. It's okay having a superstar in Tom Trbojevic, but if you've got a team that knows how to defend against superstars, such as your Melbournes, your Souths, etc., then they're going to struggle because they don't really have as much particular halves. And I think, I know Lachlan Croker's done a decent job, but I feel they need a better rucker up that middle. I think although he's playing out of position, and he has done a really good job, I wouldn't say anything otherwise, but I feel like they need a strong out-and-out hooker to really enable it. If you have someone like a Damian Cook, a Nappy Korosawa around that middle, utilising Tom Trbojevic off the back of it, I think I'd be absolutely such a destructive force, even more so than he already is. But I feel like that's something that they're lacking this season. But overall, a really good season from what started out miserably, so, and lots to build on. It's a young squad with a young pack and young backs, and in my opinion, probably this, well, definitely this season, the best three outside backs in the league in Tom, Ruben and Jason Saab. So what's a very bright future for the Seagulls, mate?
Yeah, and I don't want to start playing NRL fantasy, but I feel like they would really benefit from someone like a Jaden Brayley at nine, you know, someone who's just going to be very metronome-like, go through the motions, be very solid in defence. They don't need anyone flashy, do they, really? They've got the likes of Turbo and DCU who can control it in the middle. But would it? What do Manly need to do to A, have almost a better season next year, and B, probably try and get that top four position again?
Yeah, I think Jed probably nailed it in trying to find a plan B, especially either when Turbo's out or it's not working. I think as good as their season's been, obviously one game away from the NRL Grand Final, which is awesome for them, especially after the start. I think after those first four, they went 16-4, which is a pretty mega run. But the big caveat to their season is that they lost all the games against the top three sides. And in a few of them, they got absolutely hammered, like really well outplayed, especially in the final series. So it's making that step up from being the clear fourth best team. But you know, they've got some young players in there, set them really well this year, got another year under their belt, got to the final series, got that back three's mega. Jason Saab and Gareth have been awesome, got a lot of art too. Josh Huster have another year under their belt. So it's definitely going to be positive again next year, and they'll be right up there in that top four again, I think. So yeah, it's just building on this season and finding a plan B.
What do you reckon is their smartest option for a plan B, Jed?
I don't know. If I knew that question, I'd be an NRL coach. I think to not be over-reliant makes them need a plan B, if that makes sense, because everything they do goes through Tom Trbojevic. So I think maybe utilising... Like, DC is a fantastic halfback, and they've got good strike players that they can use without Tom Trbojevic. So I don't know, maybe it's using the centres a little bit more. Maybe I don't know, but I think it's just not being over reliant on Tom will go to be their plan B, because everything that good that comes from Manly goes through Tom at the moment, and it's a lot of, I mean, he takes it all in his stride, but it's got its own downfalls as well.
Would it? We've seen it all season long with the likes of Benji Marshall at the Bunnies. Is the use of the bench halfback going to be a common theme going into next year, do you think?
I think it could be, and I guess it depends on the squad makeup and if you've got a kind of reserve half like Benji that you can use. It obviously works really well for South Sydney, and he can step on for a stint and change it up a bit or give Reynolds a bit of a rest, but it kind of depends on who you're playing and horses of courses, really. But yeah, I think it's a really good option if you've got someone like him, obviously.
I think it works really well if you've got, not really in this case because Benji's not a good example, but if you've got a typical number 14 that can play in that position but also fill out elsewhere. So a perfect example of it is
Moses Mbai. Who?
Moses Mbai.
Okay. That's because not who I thought you were going to say.
Because he can play fullback, he can play half, and he can play centre, and he can fill in and do a decent job at all of them levels. So I think like that's something that maybe teams could potentially look at to explore a little bit more. I do think Benji's kind of a certain particular case, because I can't see that working for a lot of the clubs, but Souths have utilised him really well this season. But I don't know whether that will be, maybe they're going to try and do that with Anthony Milford next season if they are looking to move Blake Taff into halves to have Cody Walker, and that's going to be Milford's role, which if that is the way they're going, I reckon could work really, really well, and I think Milford would thrive off the back of that, to be honest. But whether it's sustainable in the NRL as a whole, I don't know.
I think something, another player and another club will see out next year is Connor Watson at Roosters.
Very true.
That's what I thought you were going to say, so I apologise for interrupting. last but not least, Woody, Blake Taff, we've mentioned him already. He's breaking records left, right and centre. Can he win the Bunnies a grand final?
Why not, mate? He's been absolutely awesome. He seems to be getting better every game as well. And coming into the final series, I was absolutely sure that they had no hope of reaching the grand final without Latrell. Thought they wouldn't get through kind of the first round, but kind of dispelled that theory massively. So, yeah, he's been awesome. Even took over the goal kicking from Reynolds because he had a bit of a strain at the weekend. So, and like you said earlier, fancy taking his vacant spot in the halves next year as well. So, yeah, why not, mate? He's been absolutely class in his 7 games so far and his 100% record from them as well.
He's been amazing and he shows a lot of confidence even after he's made mistakes, which shows a lot of maturity in a player because he has had one or two like easy drop balls and he doesn't let it bother him. He just gets back on and carries on with his game. And I just wanted to touch on Jackson Paulo's try. I think it's the first time I've ever seen a player moonwalk across the line and probably one of my favourite tries of this final series. I just thought it was really comical how he just carried on running backwards because he didn't really know what else to do.
I was wondering that. I don't know why he did it. Did he think someone was behind him and going to tackle him? Or was he just being cocky? I don't actually know what he was doing.
I think he was looking for an offload. I think he thought someone was behind him who was going to get tackled. So he was looking for an offload to give it someone else to score. But he just kept going. So I think he just went with it then.
Superb stuff. So the South Sydney Bunnies are in their first grand final since 2014. We have briefly mentioned who they are going to play, Jed. But just in case someone has been avoiding the result, you watched the second semi-final for us, didn't you?
Yeah, and what a game. I mean, it was the only benefit of having COVID is that I could be at home for both of these games in the morning and watch them. And I actually set my alarm at 7 a.m. on a Saturday to get up and watch this. And I was not disappointed. Melbourne Storm 6, Penrith Panthers 10, and what a turn up for the Bucks. Penrith backing up their grueling win over Parramatta last week with an even tougher game this week, proving a lot of doubters wrong and ensuring they made their way back to the grand final showpiece, looking to go one further than they did last year by knocking off, obviously, the champions in Melbourne in the prelims. I mean, in the first half, Penrith did absolutely everything right, completely starved Melbourne of any real attacking potency. And even when Melbourne had the ball and the ability to attack, still it very, very un-Melbourne-like costly errors. And it cost them throughout the period of the game. I mean, they actually made 16 errors in this game, which is incredibly high for anyone. But I can't think of Melbourne ever getting anywhere near that. And it would just play like Cameron Munster looked completely off it. Harry Grant looked off it. Even your reliable forwards, Tuikum and Kamicha, making silly errors. Just all over the shop. It was just a real uncharacteristic, clunky, disjointed performance. Whereas Penrith looked a lot more fluid when they had the ball. Both teams defended out the skins. I can't really fault that. Defensively, both teams were on top form. But the halves of Cleary and Luai dominated the halves battle. And Munster didn't really get involved in the game. And it left Hughes, who was still impressive, it must be said, to do it all on his own. But in a prelim final, you need both halves firing to get you to the next stage. And that didn't happen in this game for Melbourne. A moment of genius in the 4th minute broke the deadlock. For those who haven't seen it, Nathan Cleary, I think it's the 4th tackle, maybe the 3rd. Nathan Cleary is at dummy half, literally on Melbourne Storm. He takes a step back, kicks it out to the wing. Crichton's completely got no one around him and he just goes in for a walk-in. An absolute moment of genius from Nathan Cleary. And then it was 6-0 and that was after the 4th minute. And it stayed that score for the rest of the first half. Melbourne very nearly got there. Jerome Hughes pouncing on a loose ball, making his way upfield, getting caught by Scott Sorensen, which must be commended. It was very Scott Sattler-esque. Not as good, but I mean, it was a forward chasing down a halfback and he made the tackle and stopped it because if Melbourne score then in the last minute and it goes in at 6-4 or 6-6, it's potentially a very different second half. So Scott Sorensen's effort must be applauded for how impressive it was. The second half was still very frantic, but the quality did tail off. A lot of them more errors coming in. Penrith started making a few more errors, but the intensity did not tail off at all. It was still very much intense all the way through. Both teams scoring a try. A well-worked team move from Penrith put Brian Tutt over in for the corner on his return. An absolutely impressive return, it must be said as well, coming back from that ankle injury. 26 runs, I think, for 210 metres. Obviously bagging a try and just was his classic Brian Tutt self. While Melbourne's try was quite fortunate, to be fair. Munster putting in what wasn't the best kick, a little deft kick through. And I can't remember which Penrith forward, but sort of got turned around by it and couldn't really grasp it back in. And then Papenhuyzen just got the ball and just went over the line. But that were Melbourne's only points of the game. But then this led to a chaotic 15 minutes with Melbourne throwing absolutely everything in the kitchen sink at Penrith. But they held on, showed great resolve and showed a refusal to lose the game and fully deserved their place in the grand final. I mean, losing Brandon Smith and Christian Welch so early on was a massive blow for the Storm. They're such influential players. Chris, I mean, I'm just going to come for you quickly, just in touch on a medical point. Christian Welch had a head knock in the second minute, but then didn't go off after until the eighth minute. I just wonder what your thoughts on that are, Jamie.
Yeah, it's one of these where it's the discrepancy of the medical staff, whether it's a physio or doctor who's on the field. It's really easy for us to see it in real time, see that he was knocked out, even whether it was for a second, and then he's hit the floor, come back round and got back up and he was a bit jittery. And the physios don't have the benefit of seeing live footage. They don't see it on a TV before. All they've got to do is run straight on and judge what they can there in front of them. And if it takes them an extra minute or so to work out, obviously at this point it was, 5 or 6 minutes, then they've got to bring him off. That hopefully can only be improved on in the future, because there's another example, which I'm sure you'll talk about, in Jerome Luai, who not only this type of thing came up, but he didn't get brought off. And then after the game, he even explained about him having a blackout and being dizzy, which has been papered over by the NRL in terms of how he passed all his medical checks and whatnot as well. But I don't know if you've seen online, but Christopher Nowinski, who was a professor at Harvard in terms of concussion protocols and whatnot, who's an ex-WWE wrestler who actually retired from concussion, has come out and basically said it's disgusting now, it shouldn't happen and blah, blah, blah. So long answer short, mate, but it's so hard to say, because I've been in that position as an on-field physio, and you don't have the benefit of watching 5 replays and realising that he was knocked out. And obviously Christian Welch ain't going to tell you. It looks poor and it looks amateur, but it's so hard in that point. And I think at least there's a positive that Welch was eventually brought off.
Yeah, and again, the Jerome Luai thing, I think he's probably not done it. If he doesn't mention that in his post-match interview, it probably gets brushed over and not much acknowledged of it. But the fact he's come out and said that he blacked out and felt dizzy, it's just not a good look for the game at all. And to be fair, Penrith should have 100% had a penalty for that incident. How that wasn't a penalty, I think they've already come out and said the referee's got it wrong, which is, I don't want to get drawn on the negatives, but such clear missed penalties in such an important game, it's really not what we want to be seeing at this stage. Just to touch on a player who we've probably all been a little bit critical of him, and I don't think it's because of him or how he is as a player, but when you look at even every single team in the playoffs, all the top 8, and you had to rank the fullbacks, would I be fair in saying Dylan Edwards probably ranks bottom of all 8?
Yeah, so I'd agree.
But he was absolutely outstanding, and it's the best game I've ever seen him play. He was so safe under the high ball, defused numerous bombs. The only one he dropped when he was actually sort of taken out by a Storm player. 7 out of 7 tackles, 100% proficiency, 201 metres from 25 runs and 7 tackle busts, 1 offload. Really impressive. And they're definitely the type of game that someone like Dylan Edwards, who I think is a confidence player, needs before heading into a grand final. Kurt Capewell, a brilliant force in both attack and defence. 50 tackles, 106 metres, 2 offloads, 1 tackle bust and 1 line break. Brisbane are getting an absolute hell of a player next year. And I just want a little shout out. Jerome Hughes was very good in this game, probably Melbourne's best player, but George Jennings was really, really impressive. A constant thorn in the side of Penrith, and has really transformed his game at Melbourne this season. He got 158 metres and 6 tackle busts, and I thought he deserved a little nod. Woody, I'm going to come to you first. I personally think this has been a very successful season for the Storm. It's so hard to go back-to-back. Roosters are the only team that have done it in the NRL era, and they were the first team since, I think, Parramatta did it in the 80s. 19 games in a 1 in a row, equaling the record, but they have just come up that little bit short and seem to have sort of faltered in the playoffs and coming into the playoffs. How would you summarise the Storm season, mate?
I think when you look at what they did actually achieve, like you said, at the 19-game winning run, they won 22 and lost 4 overall, only lost to 2 different teams, Panthers and Para twice, won the minor premiership. Obviously, got to be pretty happy with that on the face of it. And, you know, they've had loads of different players stepping in. They rotated quite a lot during that run. A lot of young players stepping in and kind of kept churning out those wins. But when they've kind of come so close to getting back to the grand final and lost out, obviously going to be very disappointed how it ends, because they didn't want to just take a minor premiership away from this season. But yeah, it's still been a phenomenal season. Broke a lot of records, but they'll be really gutted to have missed out to Penrith as well after last year and got so close to it.
Sticking with Melbourne, Jamie, they seem to, when they lost that game to Para, which they needed to win to get the 20th and break the record, even the few games before that, they seem to be not weakening, but not the usual Melbourne that we'd seen throughout the rest of the season. What do you think happened? Do you think they've just run out of steam and they didn't have anything else left? Why did they seem to have such a significant tail off towards the back end of the season?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because you can't really put Melbourne in the same cliches as being complacent, running out of steam, not having, you know, consistent coaching, because they're a squad and they're a side and they're a coaching staff who were known to have all these things. And you're right. I remember a game against Gold Coast specifically where they probably should have lost that game, but they came out winners. I think, I can't remember now if it was the Bulldogs or Broncos around that time they beat, and it wasn't right convincing as well. But yeah, I don't know. I think they've been playing with a couple of injuries, haven't they? Munster and Grant haven't been 100% all year, in my opinion. I saw a couple of people putting Grant in their team of the season. I think he's been great, but I actually still think he had a better season with the Tigers last year. But I don't know. I think Melbourne will be quite annoyed at their season. You know, with such a big winning run, with a lot of representative players, which they'll enjoy, obviously. They've won the minor premiership, but I feel like Melbourne are such a team, much like the New England Patriots almost in the NFL. If they don't at least make a grand final, they'll be really disappointed. And especially because they've been knocked out by a side that's not only finished below them, but have also lost already in the playoffs. Melbourne had a week off and a bit of rest. And Craig Bellamy is a winner. We know for a fact he doesn't care what happens in the season as long as he makes and wins a grand final. So I think he'll be a bit disgruntled at that. Have you got any thoughts on that, Woody?
Yeah, I was just thinking about how kind of dominant Nico Hines was in the first sort of half of the season when Ryan Pappenhausen was out injured. And Pappenhausen came back and they didn't really know how to use him. Nico Hines has been playing less recently and kind of neither of them have been themselves. They've not had a really dominant fullback. So Pappenhausen probably had two, you know, really good stellar games in his return, and Nico Hines has been playing 20 minutes here and there. So I don't know if that conundrum really worked out as well as it could have.
Yeah, it could have done, because it's difficult, isn't it, to say Hines was on unbelievable form until Pappenhausen came back, and then Pappenhausen's always their first choice. So it'd be difficult to start him at 14. But it's once again, it's almost a case of they had too many good players in all the same positions.
Melbourne Storm conundrum to have that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, mate, yeah.
I mean, they've got it with the hookers, with Brandon Smith and obviously Harry Grant, but they've sort of found a way to utilise both of them. But obviously, this was the last game for Dale Finucane and Nico Hines and Josh Adokaru all leaving at the end of the season. Dale and Nico both going to the Sharkies and obviously Josh Adokaru going to the Doggies. So, be a different Melbourne. Some big names lost there, but it's Melbourne. I'm sure they'll bounce back next season. I just want to touch on Penrith. I'll stick with you, Jamie. Two very, very tough games. I watched both the games against Parra and I obviously watched this week's. Very, very intense, very defence heavy. Not a lot of tries, not a lot of try opportunities. Do you think that's taken too much out of Penrith to be able to compete with South, who never really looked to fully get into the sixth gear really against Manly? They quite convincingly did it, and I think they'll have a lot more left in the tank, mate.
Yeah, I also think we'll come on to it obviously in a sec, but I might as well bring it up now. I think the injuries of Brandon Smith and Christian Welsh knocked him for six as well. Playing against such a tough defensive side of Penrith with 15 players for, what were it, about 70 minutes of the game. Yeah. They were knocking seven bells of you-know-what out of them. I just think Melbourne just carried too many injuries. Like we've mentioned, I think Pape, Munster and Grant haven't been 100% all year. And Jerome Hughes couldn't do it all by himself. I thought Grant and Munster in this game were ordinary. I don't think they were much better than average. Pappenhausen were trying. And it's rare to say about Melbourne. I just think they ran out of options. I just think that's why they made so many errors. They were trying to force it too often. They were trying to put on players that is not usually Melbourne-type players. Well-thought-out strategic players where the likes of Kronk or whatever would have set it up about 20 minutes before. I just think they ran out of ideas, mate, and against probably one of the best defensive sides and defensive displays of all time, it just, Penrith ground them out, and unbelievable performance from them.
Definitely. Woody, two-pronged question. How much of a big mental victory is this for Penrith to knock over Melbourne? And on the flip side, after these two tough games have had, do Penrith have anything left to try and really take it to Souths?
I think as a mental marker, it's absolutely massive. But you know, they don't want turning the storm over and getting a bit of revenge for last year to be their grand final. After the Para game, honestly, didn't think they'd have much left for this week, and especially coming in against the Storm. But it probably worked out pretty well that they maybe had a tough game. You know, Storm had a bit of an easy ride and then had a week off. So maybe that'll be the same sort of case with the Bunnies, where they've not had a tough tune-up game. But I know Penrith have got a few injury concerns as well. I think it looks like Vita Pango Jr. is going to be out. Brian Totter, Fisher Harris and Edwards are all having scans, but I think probably those three will be all right. So, you know, if they come through okay, and they've got a reasonably fit team, got a few players coming back as well, then, yeah, I think it's probably a good thing they've had a few tough games.
Did you see today in the, I think they were doing some sort of press conference or media day at Penrith, Viliami Kikau wheeled in Totter on a wheelchair?
I love that. That's definitely mind games, but I'm here for it 100%.
So funny.
Very interesting comment. I don't know if you saw what Adam Reynolds said at the after the victory. They asked him, who would you rather play in the grand final? And it's usually players won't really respond to this, but he said he would rather play the Melbourne Storm. So I don't know how much that will be playing on Penrith's mind, whether they've got a little bit of a marker thinking that they didn't think they were going to get there, but it's just another little layer to add to this grand final. And Jamie, coming to the grand final, I mean, I'll get your thoughts on it now. What are your thoughts in general? Because I think this could be one of the best grand finals we've had in years, and I generally could go either way.
I think it's going to be an absolutely remarkable game. I honestly do. I think it's from, I'd say a neutral, but from a Tigers perspective, it's nice not to see Storm or Roosters in there, even though I've got so much respect for them two clubs and squads. Penrith deserve it off the back of two unbelievable years and you know, 6-7 years of building the club up from the ground. Wayne Bennett has proved it once again that he is the master tactician. He knows what he's doing. The fact that Bunnies have gone through these performances without their most dominant, influential player, Latrell Mitchell. Two of the most influential halfback partnerships in the game, and the two kind of nominees of what were going to be the New South Wales partnership, you know, this year as well, that they were talking about, along with obviously White and Moses as well. Two sides who love to attack, who've got dominant sides that they like to go to. The only thing that stands out for me, and Cooper Cronk has touched on it in his analysis, is that Penrith are by far the better defensive side. And the Bunnies obviously have a better attacking strategy than Penrith. But Penrith have only scored 4 tries in this playoff series, and 3 of them 4 tries have come from kicks. So if they get a bit stuck and try and skirt their way around it, Penrith will find it quite difficult, I think, with ball in hand, which is something I wouldn't have said at all earlier on this season, with being the most attacking side possible. And if the Bunnies start as hot as they can do and could easily race to where to something like a 12 or 16 nil lead, I think it could get a bit dangerous for Penrith. But I'm a big believer that you've got to lose one to win one. And the amount of uphill battles that Penrith have faced recently with injuries and Origin and losing the grand final last year and so on and so forth, I'm going to back Penrith. But I'm so excited to see it, and I'm sure you are as well, Woody, mate. What are you going to make of it?
Well, everything I usually predict turns to you-know-what, so I'll not put the curse on either of the teams by plucking for them. I reckon it's going to be a tight one. Might go to golden point. We'll see a load of field goal attempts, but yeah, my view, it should be an absolute cracker. And I think Penrith are probably going to have to come with, you know, a box of tricks to try and score a few tries. And trying to touch on that Crichton try you mentioned earlier, Jed, that kick from Cleary. I was reading that, you know, the level of detail that's gone into that try is both the Clearys have been planning that for about 5 months now since the Roosters pulled off similar. So James Tedesco stepped in at dummy half in a game and kicked out wide for Cavalli because they saw Josh Adokar come in off the wing. They've been waiting for that, you know, since back in April to pull that off, and it worked a treat. So yeah, expecting Penrith to come with a few goodies.
Interesting point on that is that James Tedesco did that in the 79th minute so the Roosters wouldn't get nilled. Because I remember watching that game, and he just did it just so they didn't get nilled. And that's fair play to both, obviously, Ivan and Nathan, acknowledging that and taking it to try and turn it into a positive and put them in good stead and doing it at the beginning of a game. I thought, yeah, now that you've just said that, I think it's even more impressive that they did it. I can't wait for this game. I am going to tip my hat towards the Souths. I predicted Souths to win the grand final at the start of the season, purely for the Wayne Bennett effect. He knows how to get his teams riled for a playoff series. I feel they've had better, more comfortable games, shall we say, going into this. So I think they'll have more in the tank. Obviously, Penrith are carrying a few knocks. I think the only thing that does go in Penrith's favour is that we know Souths can leak points, and Manly showed that even in their game. They scored technically 5 tries, 2 disallowed, a lot of them from quite a long range as well. So I know Wayne Bennett will want to tie them up on the edges, but yeah, I think Souths have just got that a little bit too much and should see them over the line. And I'm always one for a fairy tale, and you've got to look at the Benji and Adam Reynolds as well. Club record point scorer, should be staying there for another 3. It's an absolute tragedy that they're not giving him a 3-year deal when he's such an influential player. In his final game for his hometown club, and I think for both of them to go off in grand final glory would be a fitting tribute to both of them. So yeah, I'm going to go for South in that one. And I'll throw it over to you to go start us walking through the Super League games, Jamie.
Yeah, well, just before we finish as well, I think on top of that, Dane Gagai and Jaden Sewer leaving. Big names along with Bennett and Reynolds. I think if anything's going to will them across the line, and I don't think they'll be as good next year. So, and obviously, potentially Benji's, we no idea where Benji's going as well. So, definitely, mate, what a grand final. Just before we do go to Super League, lads, obviously it was the Dally M's this morning for us and last night for the Aussies in the Southern Hemisphere. I'll just run through them very briefly to see if we've got any disagreements or anything. Tommy Turbo winning the Dally M Player of the Year. No arguments at all from any of us, I'm sure.
No qualms.
Rookie of the Year, Sam Walker. What a player, what a debut season he's had. Captain of the Year, James Tedesco. Fair play to him. Obviously, the Roosters have been really backs against the wall. Craig Bellamy, Coach of the Year. No question about that. Potentially Wayne Bennett if they do win the grand final. So we'll come on to the Team of the Year. Fullback, Tommy. I'll pick out the ones that I feel as though won. What have any disagreements initially? So Tommy Turbo, Fullback of the Year. Nathan Cleary and Cody Walker, Halfback Partnerships. Brandon Smith, Hooker. Centres, Burton and Olam. Wingers, Toto and Garrick. Any arguments on them, Jed, do you feel?
Maybe I think Alex Johnston's maybe a little bit hard done by. I feel like he's just consistently overlooked. Nothing against Garrick or I think Brian Toto 100%. You can't really argue with Brian Toto being there. I think Ruben Garrick, maybe probably, yeah, fair point, I understand, but I don't know. I just think I've got a bit of a soft spot for Alex Johnston because he never gets the recognition that he deserves. And back-to-back Ken Irvine medal now for top try scorer. He was last season and this season. And yeah, I think he just does a lot of hard work and consistently shows up. And he's on 29. And I think I think that's the joint record for the most in an NRL era season. And he missed like 5 games through injury. And in that, Josh Mansard got 7 tries. And a lot of them, Alex Johnston would have got to be in the mid-30s. So, yeah, maybe Alex Johnston, but I can't really argue too much about Ruben Garrick, who I think he's now the second highest point scorer in a season after Hazem El Masri in 04.
Wow, crazy stuff. And Woody, just coming on to you, mate. Payne Haas and James Fisharis at prop. Viliami Kikau and Isaiah Papali'i at second row and Isaiah Yeo at lock. Any arguments there, mate?
Just maybe the Viliami Kikau shout, maybe. You know, Angus Crichton and maybe someone like Lockhart, who I think maybe could have shaded him in there. And not really Isaiah Yeo definitely deserves a spot, but Cam Murray must have been pretty close as well between them two. But yeah, no arguments on the other shouts. So a lot of shoe-ins there.
Definitely so, mate. I think Angus Crichton not getting in there is a travesty. He's had an unbelievable season. Have you got any thoughts on that one, Jed?
I'd probably say Christine Welch for me at prop over Payne Haas. I think he's another player that is in a squad. We've spoken about numerous times, which is why we did our voting system of the 5 points. Payne Haas is by far Brisbane's best player. So whenever Brisbane get any points, they're going to go majority to him. But your likes of your Angus Crichtons and your likes of any player at the Roosters or the Penrith even or Storm, they're likely to get drowned out due to big players getting more players. And even if they're consistently impressive, they're not really going to get the points, such as your Christian Welch's. So nothing against Payne Haas, but Angus Crichton and Christian Welch should have got them 2 slots for me.
I think the only other tight one for me as well is probably between Matt Burton and Joey Marner, if that was a centre spot. Then if Joey Marner getting injured at the end of the season, probably counting him out the last few games, yeah, I'd say those two were probably a 50-50 flip, but both would have been deserving to go alongside Justin Earlham.
I would still probably say Joey Marner is the best centre in the world as well. I think he's outstanding. Superb, lads. Thank you very much. And we're very excited to cover our second ever NRL Grand Final on this podcast next week as well. So Jed and Woody will be taking teams respectively, rating them out of 10, much as we do for the State of Origin. And we will be dissecting that game as best as we can. Coming on to the Super League playoffs now. 2 games this week and going into our playoff system. Wigan Warriors 0, Leeds Rhinos 8, and Warrington Wolves 0, Hull Kingston Rovers 19. Not only two nil-ins, but Jed, two arguably the favourites in both of these games getting nilled by the two underdogs. Incredibly unheard of. And what do you make of Wigan's performance, mate, against a strong Leeds side?
I mean, Wigan have been really poor now for quite a few weeks. They just can't scheme to score points. I think it's probably like the fourth time they've been nilled in about 10 games or something like that. Jackson Hastings is now left, going to your boys, the West Tigers. Adrian Lamb's left. I mean, it's always nice to see Wigan get nilled. I mean, I wish it wasn't Leeds on the other side of it. But yeah, I mean, it's just good, I suppose. Leeds proving quite a few people wrong. They have started to pick up a lot of form. I think both these teams will lose in, obviously, the Super League semi-finals. But yeah, I mean, really good for Hull KR to go from wooden spoons last year to now getting to the semi-finals. But yeah, Wigan just really disappointing, not playing any kind of attractive rugby league, and just really, really disappointing for them.
And I forgot to say, Jed, but Ollie Gildart going to the Tigers as well.
Oh yeah, of course. So, hopefully he'll be a big success over there.
Yeah, big changes coming in at Wigan. And I agree with you, mate. Don't want to see Leeds in the semis. But I feel as though Catalan and St. Helens will go through there quite comfortably and deserve to be so, mate. You know, two of the best sides this year. Woody, OKR once again, mate. I know you've been a big supporter of them throughout this season. But Warrington, I mean, they've arguably got the best squad in Super League and have done time and time again. And, you know, it's always there, yeah. He's a famous chant that's always chanted at games. What is going on at Warrington, and what an incredible win for OKR.
Still cannot get my head around that result. Like I said about my predictions, whatever I predict turns to you know what, sir. I predicted an easy win for Warrington last week, and that OKR season was definitely over, sir. No shocks that the complete opposite happened. Yeah, honestly, no idea what went on. They know OKR got a few key players out as well. Like you say, Warrington got a mega squad and completely capitulated there in front of their own fans, and some the Wigan Leeds game as well. See, in the NRL final series, there's been some really good low scoring games, you know, the Penrith games, but this was not a good low scoring game. This wasn't two great defences, it's just two terrible attacks, pretty much. And like you said, Jed, Wigan have been turgid for ages now and didn't deserve to go any further. But I still think Leeds have got a reasonable shout to repeat their old trick of going from fifth to win the lot. You know, I don't think they're not obviously odds on or anything, but I still think they're going to cause a shock, but it's going to be difficult against Saints.
Can I just have a little shout out to Jordan Abdul as well? I think it's been absolutely unbelievable for Hull KR and sort of has absolutely transformed his career there. One of the best players in the league. He's one of the front runners for Man of Steel. And I just think he's been integral to everything that Hull KR have done this season. And a big shout out to someone that I didn't rate at the Cowboys, but has been very impressive as a second row, and that's Kane Linnett. I didn't really rate him as a centre at the Cowboys, but he's been very, very strong in the back row for the Rovers.
And that Mikey Lewis try as well, that chip and chase over the top, superb, really, really good stuff. Coming on to the women's game as well, lads, it wasn't the only Super League playoffs coming into this weekend. It was the men's, obviously, that we just spoke about, and the women's. The dominant, and I mean dominant, St. Helens side have continued to roll on. A 58-0 victory against the Casford Tigers. And all of that was without Emily Rudge as well, who is obviously one of the best players in the game. And a bit more of a tighter contest in the Sunday game was Leeds Rhinos against York City Knights. York City Knights sporting our future guest, Kelsey Gentles, who is going to be on the podcast next week, who actually scored a try in this game, but unfortunately lost 22-18 to the Leeds Rhinos. Both these games are on TV. Personally, I'll stick my hand up. I've only seen the highlights, Woody, but I mean, talk about this St. Helens team, mate. They're so dominant and kind of probably going to be the force in the next couple of years, aren't they?
Definitely, yeah. 58-0 in the semi-final is just absolutely mind-blowing. I don't think it's really that big a slight on Cass Ivers. Like you say, this Saints team's absolutely phenomenal. And one win away now from doing the treble, which would be a huge achievement for them. And can't see them being stopped, especially not on the back of that result.
And I'm sure we'll chat about it next week with Kelsey, Jed. But, you know, York were 14-4 up at half-time. They've got to be really disappointed with letting that slip in the second half.
Yeah, massively. I mean, they should have been able to see out the game. And they'll be bitterly disappointed that they didn't make it to their first grand final. But still, it's been a successful season for York. They made it to the Challenge Cup final as well. And obviously now just one step behind the grand final. So big things, and they're a team that's continuing to grow. So I think they'll have an even bigger season next season.
Is this a bit of an easy question, lads, but who's going to win it next week between Saints and Leeds?
Saints, easily for me. The Harlem Globetrotters of Women's Rugby League, they're just unbelievable.
Yeah, got to be Saints for the treble for me as well. You know, Leeds are trying to defend their crown into a third grand final in a row, but yeah, I can't see Saints letting that slip.
Yeah, I'll go with the trifecta as well. And I believe Emily Rudge is going back into the squad as well. So, incredible team, St. Helens, and fair play to all the women participating this year as well. We've got a lot to fight against, and we're still doing really well. Thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 111 of Three Blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Head on over to our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, please give us a rating on all our podcasting platforms, if possible, please. We're available on all podcasting platforms, and keep an eye out for any future podcasts and interviews or ever listen to our archive with the likes of Tom Johnston, Barry McDermott, Adrian Morley, Emily Rudge, Tommy Makinson, Jodie Cunningham, Reece Lynn, Joe Philbin, Jack Wellsby. And coming up next week, we have England superstar Kelsey Gentles as well. Coming up this Thursday, we have a podcast highlighting the NRL Grand Final. Interesting facts and statistics that we have found all over the shop. And once again, thank you very much, Callum, Woody Wood and Jed Amos. Got out a couple of squeaky bums themselves. And we will catch you all down the road.